The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.com. First up, from LighthouseForTheBlind.org, LHBlind.org, a webinar, Essential Tech for Travelers Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired, April 24th from 4 to 5 p.m. Join the Lighthouse for the Blind Incorporated webinar team and Tim Paulding, P-A-U-L-D-I-N-G, Blind Orientation and Mobility Specialist, as we explore a variety of accessible technologies for travelers who are blind or visually impaired. During this interactive session, we'll demonstrate three leading apps that assist in wayfinding, route planning, and public transit, equipping you with the power to get where you want to go when you want to get there. Don't miss out on this engaging and informative session that will empower you to travel with confidence and independence. Register now to reserve your spot at the hot link. After registering, you will receive a confirmation email containing information about joining the webinar. Please reach out to questions@lhblind.org if you have any questions or need assistance registering for this event. DisabilityRightsNC.org reminds us that time is running out to register for the 2024 Disability Advocacy Conference. It's on Olmsted Now in NC. Details Wednesday, May 1st from 8:30 to 5 at the McKimmon Center, 1101 Gorman Street, Raleigh, NC, 27606. There are drop-down tabs to become a sponsor, become an exhibitor, breakout sessions, and the schedule. A plenary speaker bio of Bishop William Barber II, scholarship information, and I'm going to read the drop-down tabs to request an accommodation. The deadline was Monday, April 15th. Requests made after this date will be managed to the best of our ability for accessibility accommodations. Pricing, general admission, $155. Attorneys, certified CLE, $195. Dollars. Admission includes access to plenary and breakout sessions, networking breakfast, lunch, and exhibitor fare. In addition, attendees will be able to sponsor a scholarship for $155 for a person with a disability to attend. More drop-down tabs for continuing education, conference materials. The refund policy since April 15th has passed. After April 15th, the refund of $75 or the amount paid minus a $25 handling fee, if less than $75, will be issued. Refunds will be issued by check within 21 days of receipt of a written request for a refund, mailed to the attention of Cara Policelli, P-A-O-L-I-C-E-L-L-I, or emailed to conference@disabilityrightsnc.org. More drop-down tabs, authorization to photograph and video. That's your waiver to have your image appear in media. A register tab, hotel and accommodations information, and a tab to print out our conference. AFB.org has two articles of interest. AFB announces editorial transition for Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness. Contact Tony Stevens, STEPHENS, Director of Communications, 212-502-7627, or email TSTEPHENS@AFB.org. Dateline Washington, April 16th. After 9 years at the helm of AFB's Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, JVIB, Sandra Lewis, Doctor of Education, Florida State University retired, has expressed her intention to step away from her duties as the journal's editor-in-chief. Robert Wall Emerson, Ph.D., Western Michigan University, the journal's research editor since 2012, will step into the role in July 2024. For over 9 years, Dr. Lewis has served as a steady presence for the many people who interact with JVIB, and we thank her for her years of service to AFB and the field, said AFB CEO Eric Bridges. The hallmark of Dr. Lewis's tenure tenure as editor-in-chief of the journal has been the warmth and dignity in her interactions with the journal's editors, reviewers, and authors. Her steady leadership, including through moments of uncertainty, her ability to make difficult decisions, and her capacity as an editor has helped shape the literature of the field in countless meaningful ways that will never be forgotten. As editor-in-chief, Dr. Lewis oversaw the transition of the journal's submission and peer review procedures from an in-house operation to a more efficient web-based system that shortened the processing time for acceptance decisions. Dr. Lewis also welcomed the continued commitment to JVIB by AFB's Board of Trustees, which culminated in their successful search for sustaining funding for the journal through a generous gift by the Marilyn and Francine Gruder Trust. With background in the education of students with visual impairments, in 1993, Dr. Lewis completed her doctoral program in special education, visual impairment, at the University of California, Berkeley, and San Francisco State University, under the supervision of Philip Hatlin. The same year, she began working as assistant professor and coordinator for the Program in Visual Disabilities, Department of Special Education, Florida State University, FSU. She became a full professor in 2010 and retired from FSU in 2021. Despite her busy schedule, Dr. Lewis graciously accepted the role of editor-in-chief of JVIB in 2015. Prior to accepting that role, Dr. Lewis served as chair of the journal's editorial advisory board from 2014 to 2015, and she first became a board member in 2006. In addition to mentoring the journal's authors and her own students, as well as overseeing the publication of countless journal articles, Dr. Lewis authored and edited textbooks, including ECC Essentials, Teaching the Expanded Core Curriculum to Students with Visual Impairments, which she co-edited with Carol Allman in 2014. Published journal articles, and contributed numerous book chapters and conference presentations over the course of her distinguished career. Dr. Lewis has been recognized by her peers for her important contributions to the field of visual impairment with the 2023 Alan J. Koenig Research in Literacy Award, which she received at the Getting in Touch with Literacy Conference, the 2018 Distinguished Service Award bestowed by the Division on Visual Impairments and Deafblindness, Council for Exceptional Children, the 2014 University Undergraduate Teaching Award given by FSU, and the 2010 Mary Kay Bauman Award for Significant and Outstanding Contributions in Education given by the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired, AER. In retirement, Dr. Lewis will enjoy her new life at Latitude Margaritaville in Daytona Beach, Florida, with her husband Paul and their dog Benny. They have 5 grown children and 10 grandchildren. After many years working as an orientation and mobility instructor and vision teacher, in 1999, Dr. Wall Emerson earned his doctoral degree in education and human development, with a specialization in orientation and mobility from Vanderbilt University, Nashville, Tennessee. From 2000 to 2004, he held the position of research assistant professor at Vanderbilt Bill Wilkerson Center for Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences. In 2004, he moved to Western Michigan University, where he currently works as a professor in the Department of Blindness and Low Vision Studies. As a Certified Orientation and Mobility Specialist, COMS, and a teacher of students with visual impairments, Dr. Wall Emerson has conducted blindness-related research for over 25 years. His areas of interest include accessibility of roundabouts and channelized right-turn lanes, traffic gap perception and decision to cross, accessible pedestrian signals, acoustics in blind navigation, assistive technology for navigation, availability of Braille transcribers, biomechanics of long cane use, Braille literacy, Braille production and methodology and systems, cortical visual impairment, description of mathematics images for students who are blind, the effect of hybrid or quiet vehicles on performing orientation and mobility tasks, the effect of slope on veering, surface guidance materials for people who are blind, and technology for description of visual media for students with visual impairments. He has published over 85 peer-reviewed articles and 9 book chapters, and he is an editor for the 4th edition of the Foundations of O&M textbook. Notably, 2 of his statistical sidebar contributions are among the most downloaded items published in the pages of JVIB. For the past 12 years, in his role as research editor, Dr. Wall Emerson has evaluated and critiqued the methodology of every research article submitted to JVIB. Taken together with his vast areas of expertise, Dr. Wall Emerson is the natural choice to succeed Dr. Lewis as editor-in-chief of the journal. All of us at AFB look forward to working with Rob as he takes the reins and steers the journal into the future, Bridges added. Dr. Wall Emerson is originally from Canada, but has been in the United States since 1994. He counts himself lucky to have Catherine as his wife and partner, learning from her work as a comms and as a new clinical social worker, as well as having her as a wise sounding board. They live in Kalamazoo, Michigan, with their daughter Paisley, son Alex, and two dogs, Nutmeg and Toffee. Founded in 1921, the American Foundation for the Blind creates equal opportunities and expands possibilities for people who are blind, deafblind, or have low vision through advocacy, thought leadership, and strategic partnerships. In addition to publishing the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, JVIB, AFB is also the proud steward of the Helen Keller Archive, which is available on the AFB website at www.afb.org. AFB welcomes new trustees. Dateline, Arlington, Virginia, April 17th. The American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, welcomed its newest members to the AFB Board of Trustees following a successful orientation during the March 2024 board meeting held in Alexandria, Virginia. The slate of recently appointed trustees brings a wealth of experience in nonprofit leadership and governance and a deep understanding of the daily experiences of people who are blind or have low vision. We're excited by the energy and enthusiasm our new trustees bring to the board, said AFB President and CEO Eric Bridges. Their combined knowledge and expertise will help guide AFB as we embark on our new strategic plan to create a future of endless possibilities for people who are blind or have low vision. The newly appointed members of the Board of Trustees include Jamie Dean, Senior Corporate Counsel, Accessibility for Microsoft, Sharon Goivinazzo, G-I-O-V-I-N-A-Z-Z-O, Giovinazzo, Chief Executive Officer for the Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired, San Francisco, and James Hands, Chief Financial and Operating Officer for the Seeing Eye. Invaluable insights and collaboration emerged during our recent in-person Board of Trustees meeting for the American Foundation for the Blind, underscoring the profound value of direct engagement and shared vision, said new trustee Sharon Giovinazzo. I am honored to be one of the newest members of this board, and I look forward to harnessing this spirit of unity and purpose to drive AFB's mission forward. During the board orientation, new trustees met with AFB staff, unpacking the organization's more than 100 years rich history of serving the field of blindness and low vision through thought leadership, advocacy, and strategic partnerships. It's a thrill and an honor to be part of such a storied organization, said new trustee James Hands, who recognized the significant value of networking with the trustees. It was encouraging to learn about all the important initiatives that AFB is leading, and I look forward to working with President and CEO Eric Bridges and the entire AFB team as we implement a new strategic plan. New trustee Jamie Dean added, I'm honored to join AFB's board as we build on the organization's rich legacy of advocacy, research, and empowerment. I was energized to gain a deeper understanding of AFB's history and the strategic plan articulated by our executive director and staff. I am eager to serve on the board during this time of renewed focus. During the board meeting, immediate past chair Debbie Dennis was present, who had been formally recognized for her service to AFB over the years. Under Dennis's leadership, the organization hired its new CEO, completed the long-awaited documentary film Possibilities, and embarked on its new strategic plan, which the new trustees will help shepherd into AFB's second century of work, under the shared leadership of AFB co-chairs Diane Fazzi, F-A-Z-Z-I, and Melanie Lockwood Herman, along with the existing trustees. Founded in 1921, the American Foundation for the Blind creates equal opportunities and expands possibilities for people who are blind, deafblind, or have low vision through advocacy, thought, leadership, and strategic partnerships, etc. From NFB.org, Dateline, April 10th, National Federation of the Blind applauds U.S. Department of Justice for web and mobile content accessibility rule. Dateline, Baltimore, Maryland. The National Federation of the Blind, the transformative advocacy organization of blind Americans, applauds the United States Department of Justice for announcing the finalization of its web and mobile content accessibility rule for state and local government entities under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act. This landmark rule will ensure that the blind and other Americans with disabilities have equal access to information, programs, and services provided by state and local government entities through websites and mobile apps. The rule requires state and local government websites and mobile apps to be made accessible to individuals with disabilities, including those who are blind or have low vision, within 2 or 3 years of its effective date, depending on the population size of the covered entity. Its release follows a notice of proposed rulemaking published last summer, regarding which the National Federation of the Blind announced serious concerns. Blind Americans commend, congratulate, and thank the Department of Justice for finalizing this crucial rule, said Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind. The dedicated staff across the Department of Justice, led by the Civil Rights Division, clearly took some of our objections to the draft rule into account. The final rule addresses the worst of the problems with the original proposed rule, and it provides the clear standards for which we have long advocated and which state and local governments have long desired. While there are still exceptions with which we disagree, we expect that covered entities will find that incorporating accessibility as a regular practice is a much wiser course than relying on those exceptions. More robust and consistent accessibility breaks down artificial barriers and empowers blind Americans to participate fully in civic life, rather than being relegated to the status of second-class citizens. We urge state and local government entities to comply with the rule as swiftly as they can. Our state affiliates and local chapters, supported by our national experts, stand ready to collaborate with these entities in making their content and services equally accessible to everyone. About the National Federation of the Blind. The National Federation of the Blind, headquartered in Baltimore, defends the rights of blind people of all ages and provides information and support to families with blind children, older Americans who are losing vision, and more. Founded in 1940, the NFB is the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans with affiliates, chapters, and divisions in all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. We believe in the hopes and dreams of blind people and work together to transform them into reality. Learn more about our many programs and initiatives at nfb.org. From acb.org, meet the 2024 BADIE-SA contest winners. The Audio Description Project, ADP, and the Described and Captioned Media Program, DCMP, are proud to announce the winners of the 2024 BADDY Awards. Celebrating the benefits of audio description in education, the contest invites students who are blind or have low vision to watch an audio-described, AD, video and write an essay evaluating the quality and usefulness of the AD. This year's winners are Grand Prize Lila Duffy, Washington, Review of I Am Ruby Bridges, Seniors, ages 16 to 21, first place, Charles Johnson, Washington, Review of Little Bighorn, The Native American View. Second place, Kai Taigue, California, that's C-A-I-T-A-G-U-E, Review of Vibrations. Third place, Agatha Holloway, Washington, Review of Getting a Job for Students Who Are Blind and Visually Impaired, Introduction to Getting a Job. Juniors, ages 11 to 15, first place, Avit Manes, Ohio, M-A-N-E-S-S, Review of Chip Taylor Communications Musical Moment. Second place, Arian Gary, Ohio, E-R-R-I-O-N-G-A-R-Y, Review of I Am Ruby Bridges. Third place, Zara Gandhi, Ontario, Canada, Review of It's Okay to Be Smart, How Blind People See with Sound. Sophomores, ages 7 to 10. First place, Imi Kostandashi, California, C-O-N-S-T-A-N-D-A-C-H-E, Review of Star Wars Episode 9. Second place, Daisy Jimenez, that's spelled D-E-I-S-Y, Jimenez, Ohio, Review of Mary Fisher. From Forbes.com, Apple Vision Pro review. The first pass at spatial computing is an accessible one for all. Review by Stephen Aquino, A-Q-U-I-N-O, Dateline, April 15th. Apple Vision Pro really does resemble a pair of ski goggles. I won't bury the lead, L-E-D-E. Apple Vision Pro is accessible. Apple garners so much attention and commensurately gets so much grief from tech industry watchers and members of the media for inventing the next big thing. People and Wall Street want innovation. They want the next iPhone. Conventional wisdom says innovation lies in hardware. That's reasonable. Yet those more nerdy than most certainly would argue software is arguably the most important aspect of any technological product. Look no further than the takes on humans. AI pin for proof. As one of those nerdier than most who happens to be a lifelong disabled person, I contend that a meaningful metric of innovation from Apple is accessibility. Year after year, Apple puts out software across its expanse of operating systems, including Vision OS, that makes its devices accessible to the disability community. Apple is not and never has been beyond reproach. And that is true for accessibility. But as a lifelong disabled person, I'm here to say it matters a whole lot to see the company who makes some of the world's most popular consumer goods accessible to disabled people. Having covered the company at extremely close range for over a decade, Apple's commitment to accessibility is not virtue signaling, nor an empty bromide. It's a high priority from the highest levels of the organization. This context is important when considering the advent of Vision Pro. A wholly new device powered by a wholly new software system doesn't often come out of Cupertino, so there's naturally a bit of trepidation over not merely how good it will be. It matters how accessible it will be, too. Given how Apple has positioned Vision Pro as ushering in the era of spatial computing, it isn't insignificant that despite imperfections in places, the device is accessible from the get-go. I've been testing Vision Pro for the last few weeks using a review unit provided to me by Apple, the highest-end $3,900 model with a terabyte of storage. My kit included accessories like the $200 carrying case and the USB-C AirPods Pro 2. Evaluating ergonomics. As a wearable computer, especially one meant for one's face, Vision Pro's ergonomic story is as critical as its software. The headset does no good if it can't be put on, after all. The device's accessibility here has been something I've pondered since it was unveiled last June's WWDC. In practice, it pleases me to report I've found getting the Vision Pro on and off to be easy. The device ships with the Solo Knit band attached, and is the band I've come to prefer. Like my friends and colleagues in the tech press, I met with Apple for a hands-on briefing with Vision Pro prior to getting the review unit. I remember having difficulty with the Solo Knit band being uncomfortable and staying secure. The dual loop band felt better, and I went home that day thinking it would be the one I'd use forevermore. I decided on a whim to give the Solo Knit band another try once my Vision Pro arrived. It was a wide choice, as I adjusted it enough such that it's both extremely comfortable and extremely secure. Moreover, it's an accessibility win that it takes only one hand to adjust the band's fit. This is especially beneficial to those who, like me, have much stronger dexterity and muscle tone in one hand versus the other. As comfortable as the Solo Knit band has been, the flip side is Vision Pro's weight. Like the pair of blue AirPods Max I received as a birthday gift a few years ago, heavy is the head that wears Vision Pro. It's noticeable, yet never once has been too much to bear. As other reviewers have noted, Apple made the correct trade-off in offloading the battery externally. Had they not, the heftiness would have been much worse. I can withstand the weight and accept the relative bulkiness as a price of admission. For others who have neurodiverse and or sensory needs, the Vision Pro's weight alone may understandably be a deal-breaker. Elsewhere ergonomically, the Vision Pro is a showcase of Apple's mastery of magnets. The way the company has leveraged magnetism in products like the iPad Smart Cover and MagSafe Battery Pack, to cite just two examples, is so masterful it would take Magneto himself blush. On Vision Pro, that magnets are used for the light seal and the prescription lenses make it incredibly accessible to affix them to the device. It's delightful to watch. Say, the light seal snap securely into place with virtually no effort. On the other hand, though, I'm disappointed by the fiddly nature of the headset's charging port. For a company so enamored with magnets, it would have been preferable if Apple applied MagSafe to the charging port. I'm no materials engineer, but the way you must line up the charger with the port and do a little shimmy to lock it in is a chore for my hand-eye coordination. There's a big difference between grasping the concept cognitively and executing it mechanically. More often than not, I trudge through the process muttering a bunch of expletives. The victory of Vision OS. Honestly, Vision OS is deserving of a feature-length article all on its own. There is so much depth and breadth that I can't reasonably cover it all with justice without making this piece several thousand words longer. My brain, not to mention my keyboard and my to-do list, is too overwhelmed at the moment to get granular on it. Suffice to say, the high-level take is what I wrote at the outset. Vision OS is accessible. It's accessible because of the discrete D-I-S-C-R-E-T-E accessibility features and because of Apple's vaunted vertical integration. Both go hand in hand, but the significance of the synergy is notable to call out in terms of accessibility. Vision OS has tried and true features like VoiceOver and Zoom, for instance. They make the computer-y experience accessible. More pointedly, for an all-new device with an all-new UI paradigm, is the family resemblance of Vision OS to Apple's other like-minded platforms. In terms of cognition, the so-called home view in Vision OS looks and acts much like the home screen on an iPhone. For many with certain neurological conditions, this sense of home and familiarity can work wonders in terms of raising one's comfort level as they adapt and acclimate to Vision Pro's unique environment. I've said it before, but that Apple took iOS and spun off so many variants is a de facto accessibility feature that often gets derided as lock-in or whatnot. To the contrary, the fact Apple's devices function more or less the same means accessibility has a far greater resonance than sheerly aforementioned bespoke accessibility features. In practical terms, there are a few things to highlight from my testing. First and foremost is Optic ID and the eye tracking to navigate the interface. My first run experience with Vision Pro at home felt a bit like deja vu, insofar as I felt as though I was reliving Face ID on iPhone X in 2017. To wit, my eyes, specifically the strabismus in my right eye, makes it such that I need to disable require attention on my phone in order to use Face ID. So it goes on Vision Pro. My left eye is strongest, so I've told the system to prefer eye movement only from the left rather than both at once. In my usage, this has worked well. Relatedly, I've not been able to summon Control Center by looking up as the default. To compensate, I've enabled Assistive Touch and set it so that clicking on it launches Control Center. Again, it's worked well in my testing. Combine those two pieces with text size being cranked up to the max, and I'm flying around Vision OS as fluidly as I do my other devices. To reiterate an earlier point, the accessibility features I use play an instrumental role in this, but so too does the family resemblance. The concepts really are inextricably tied. I've run out of time, but please read the rest of the article on Forbes. It's awesome. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. I'm sorry.